Okay, the picture that you see in front of you right now is actually not Israel, not modern Israel, but it is part of the Promised Land. It was Israel's at one time and apparently will be in the millennium. But this is standing in northern Israel. This is actually a picture I took looking into Lebanon. And the mountains here is the kind of the foothills of Mount Hermon, which back this way gets up to 9,200 feet. So it's a pretty tall mountain there. There's actually part of the mountains that are in Israel. The actual peak is not, but there are ski resorts that they actually can ski in northern Israel there. So we're going to look at a little bit, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. I'm certainly not an expert on it, but a little bit about the geology and the topography of Israel. And the geologic composition of a land, you know, the rocks and the soil, these are going to affect the topography. And your topography is, you know, the hills, the valleys, the plains, and the ridges, and all that that gives the form of a country. Now, if you go for a ride from Springfield to St. Louis, you know, it's pretty easy, pretty straightforward, just flat plains, okay? Israel is not like that, and as tiny as Israel is, it has a lot of topography. And obviously, it's something that God designed when he made the country and then brought the Israelites to it. So topography determines, certainly in the ancient times, more so than today, the routes that people could take, the roads that were formed, where people settled, where the cities were, the way communication was able to be conveyed, the lines of communication via the routes, and certainly the water sources. And the topography determined the water sources. Water sources were a big issue for making a settlement, for having a city. I think John talked a little bit about that, and we'll probably talk about maybe Jerusalem again, but the importance of the Gihon Spring, that why Jerusalem is where it is. So lines of communication, the settlements, the routes, water sources, these are things that shape biblical history. So geomorphology, just going to talk a little bit about the different kinds of rocks and soils that are in Israel. The basalt, which is basically volcanic. It's prevalent up in the Galilee area and up in the Golan Heights. And if you go travel up to like Capernaum, in north shore of the Sea of Galilee, you'll see millstones that are made out of this basalt rock, this dark black rock. And it looks something like that. It's just a result of lava flow years ago. And there are also some hot springs. There's still some activity there. Tiberias is a city that is just on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, and which actually in some of your biblical references is referred to as the Sea of Tiberias, a ruler of Rome at one point. And so we still have some activity there. Sediment laid down, and of course we take the creation view in this course, and what others might say took millions and millions of years, and they have these, the names that we use are associated with various dates and time, like 100 million and then 80 million, all this stuff. But the better explanation is that after the flood, these sediments were laid down in about this order. Hard limestone, a chalky substance, a softer limestone, and the basalt on top as a result of volcanoes. Then we have the alluvial deposits, and these are typically, you know, like the Nile Delta and all these places where they have this lush, fertile land as a result of these fine soils that have been deposited as a result of flooding or riverbeds and so forth. And we have a fair amount of that in Israel along the coasts, coastal regions, the foothills and the Shephelah. Fancy name, we'll talk about that later. So at some point after the flood, our mountains were formed throughout the world. May be part of it. I'm not expert at all on how scientists think things progressed after the flood. But what happened, we had upcropping, and so the hard limestone is on top, and this would be like Jerusalem in the center of the country. That's all the hill country, and then you have chalky area that makes nice valleys, and then you have the softer limestone. Remember how they all started we think in got laid down in a pattern like this, but after the mountains were formed and so forth, we think something like this happened, and this is the way it is today. Now, this picture, and one of the things I think would be really important in this course, I'm going to keep showing you maps and pictures, is to begin to get a picture of Israel in your mind. You know, Sea of Galilee, the River Jordan comes down, the Dead Sea, then almost directly to the west of the northern tip of the sea, of the Dead Sea, is Jerusalem. You have the mountains all there in the Judean wilderness, and then you have the Shephelah, which you're going to learn about today, and then the coastal regions. And then the south, the Negev, which means south, is kind of a very deserty area. But if we took a cross-section through Jerusalem, west to east, from the Mediterranean Sea all the way into current-day Jordan, this is what the topography looks like. We have coastal plains, and it's at sea level, Mediterranean Sea, sea level. And then it starts rising a little bit here in what we're going to call Shephelah, which is also another word for the Shephelah, would be lowlands. And you're going to see these terms are used in Scripture. And then as we get into the mountainous area, the hill country, Jerusalem, Kiriath Jearim. And then we have what we refer to as the Rift Valley, basically from the north of the Sea of Galilee and Dan, where the headwaters of the Jordan form, and then the Jordan flows into the Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee is about 700 feet below sea level, and it flows down the Jordan River, which some of you were surprised a week or two ago that Jordan's about the width of the Sangamon. And that flows on down and deposits into the Dead Sea, which is about 1,400 feet below sea level, the lowest place on Earth. It can't go anywhere. The lowest surface on the Earth. So it evaporates, and we get all these minerals, and Dawn has a good story of when she was in the Sea of Galilee, and some of her skin just got all really soft, and you can buy the stuff. It's really whatever. It's really, really helpful. So this gives you an idea of the layout of the land cutting through Jerusalem, east to west, or west to east. And then once we get on the other side of the Rift Valley, actually halfway through the Jordan River, halfway through the Dead Sea, that's the country of Jordan. And we call this the Transjordan area, which is part of the Promised Land, as best as we can tell. Israel had it at one time, and we will have it in the millennium, we believe. And so that's just a little guideline. This says it's only, this is about 1,400 feet below sea level here. So this charts off just a little bit. Okay, the hard limestone, it's found in the hill country. It's excellent for water storage, building material. Think of the temple and the Temple Mount. I think John probably showed some pictures. Where'd John go? You showed some pictures of the Temple Mount, didn't you? A little bit. These big boulders there, stones, are from the time of Herod, for over 2,000 years ago, and they're just rock solid. This is the hard limestone. Great for construction, great for building cisterns. So you see in the central hill country, in places like Masada and Jerusalem, you see these great cisterns because of the hard limestone is great for storage of the water. Difficult to work with because it's so hard, but once you get it and you get it to your building, it lasts forever, or at least for 2,000 years. The hard limestone decomposes into a fertile red soil called terra rosa. It's very, very fertile. It's great. It's got a lot of iron. It's why it's red. It's great for growing, especially like olives and grapes. Problem is, it's in the hill country. We'll see how the Israelites and the Canaanites before them got around that. But this is kind of what it might look like: the hard limestone breaking down. So you have to use terracing technique. We're probably all familiar with that from our junior high. But on a hill, if you want to grow anything, you can't plant it sideways because it'll just all run off. So you level things out, put up a wall, level things out, put up a wall, and it's kind of a stepped case situation, which is what's represented here. Here's an area, and there's a wall, and there it's lower going down the hill, and another area for trees and vines and so forth. Very big also in Nazareth, where Jesus grew up. And routes and traveling on the ridge, the valleys in the hill country are very sharp and they don't erode very well. They might, you know, and now they're filling in with debris and so forth, but in the old days, they were just very sharp, very hard to move along. But they also served as good protection. As John talked about Jerusalem, they had the valleys around Jerusalem, and it served as a very good source of protection for the city. So in the hill country, again, Jerusalem, north and south of there, there were routes that were basically ran on the ridges, and that's how people could move up and down the country, north and south, on the ridge routes, because they couldn't really go through the valleys or up and down the hills so much. And that restricts travel, offers protection. Now you're just beginning to see how, when we start thinking of the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, how this people was against that people, and you think, well, you know, you think of Illinois and go, why don't you just take an army and go boom and take them all out? Well, getting around Israel was a lot harder. And they had to come through a pass, as we looked at in the first week, that one pass was the easiest way to go. Well, Jonathan and his cupbearer went up the cliffs. They didn't expect that, but they didn't know our God. The soft chalk, it's soft chalk and limestone are found in the foothills and in the wilderness. It's poor for water storage, it's a poor building material, it's poor for farming, but it's good for grazing livestock. And it's good for routes, because as it erodes, it gives these nice U-shaped valleys, so it's very good for traveling large armies or just bands of people, you know. Typically, people traveled together because it wasn't safe to just go alone. In more open areas, movement was easier. They could travel in the valleys of the... Now we're talking mainly of the Shephelah, not so much in the hill country. Now we're down in the lowlands or the foothills, if you will. Soft limestone, kind of in between the chalk and the hard limestone, prevalent in the Shephelah. Poor for water storage needs, plastering if you want to do it. It's easy to quarry, so it's a good building material in that respect, but it doesn't last because it's not as strong as the hard limestone. There's another kind of soil produced from here. It's good for grains. It's not near as good as the Terra Rossa, but it's easier for the farmers to use. So it might not be as productive, but it's easier for them to plow and to make an agricultural crop. They can get this hard crust on it. It's called an airy crust, which you can see in the Negev and in some of the wilderness area. It's not very good for agriculture then, because you can't really till it or farm it. So again, but it does erode, and it's good for travel, and open areas, movement is easy, traveling valleys due to erosion. And again, the Shephelah has a lot of travel through to get to the hill country. You know, again, as we start thinking of where Jerusalem was very well protected. There were only certain approaches that armies could make. Gary mentioned in a message not too long ago, they talk about the country from the north. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean they're literally north of Israel, but wherever they're coming from, they're going to have to approach Jerusalem from the north. Okay, don't worry about this too much, but it just kind of gives you an idea. The alluvium, the coastal plain, good, fertile soil. You get up here to the Sea of Galilee, Galilee and the Golan, lots of basalt. You've got the limestone and the hard limestone in the hill country. It just kind of gives you an idea that, you know, if we looked at Illinois, I think it'd just be one big blob of that, right? So it would be just be mountains. Now it's too loud, right? Is that too loud? Okay. All right. Diversity. Again, I mentioned a week or two ago, there's like 50 different topographical areas within this tiny little country of Israel. So you just begins to see as you read the scriptures that, well, these guys are like right next to them. If I look on this map, how come they don't just go over there and take them over? Well, it's not that easy because things are really fragmented, broken up. Isolation and alienation are possible. And we think of the Jews and the Samaritans, the New Testament, Judean and Galilean Jews. There was a kind of a break between them. And it wasn't just the distance. It was a difficulty of travel from Galilee down to Jerusalem. Arabs and Israelis, the northern and southern kingdom, the Philistines and Israelites. We're going to look at that a little bit. It's really interesting how the topography of Israel has held the Philistines at bay, even when Israel was weak. They were able to, or not as strong as like in David and Solomon's time, they were able to hold off the Philistines because the topography was in their favor. And in time of Christ, the different jurisdictions of the Herods and Pilate and all that. So looking at a verse, and this is New American Standard, they will come in from the cities of Judah and from the environs of Jerusalem, from the land of Benjamin, from the lowland, which is Shephelah. If you look in the ESV, I don't know about other translations, but ESV actually uses the word Shephelah, and that's from the Hebrew. Oh boy, that's annoying. That's from the Hebrew. I think Gary broke this Wednesday night or something. From the hill country and from the Negev. Negev just means south, but it's desert in Israel. That's what's to the south. And bringing burnt offerings, sacrifice of grain offerings, and incense, and bringing sacrifice of thanksgiving to the house of the Lord. And so again, very similar in Jeremiah 33. But now we're going to have an idea of what these regional descriptions are as we look at some slides today. So here's my same shot looking into Lebanon and towards Mount Hermon. We think of Israel basically broken up into six strips. You have the coastal plains, you have the Shephelah or the lowlands, you have the hill country, and then you have the Jordan Rift. So you're moving from the coast of the Mediterranean, these four strips. Transjordan is on the east side of the Jordan River and is modern-day Jordan. And then you have the Negev, which is a southern area, which really isn't a strip, but it's just an area. Where's your son-in-law when you need him? Some people break Galilee and make that a separate area. Well, I mean, you can look at this a lot of different ways, but so much of the Bible took place in that central area where it is obviously broken up into the four strips there. And there, just to remind you again, coastal, Shephelah, hill country, and then the Jordan Rift. I don't know how well these are seen. Obviously, I don't have a big screen at home. That's pretty hard to tell. But again, getting yourselves oriented, Sea of Galilee, Dan, which we talk about up here, this is where the headwaters, four streams come together to form the Jordan, flows into the Sea of Galilee and down the Jordan River all the way into the Dead Sea. And so much of our Bible history takes place in this area. You can see the plains. This is a satellite picture. Plains over here, the coastal plains, the lowlands, and then the hill country and the mountains, and then the rift, which is also a fault line right here. And this just adds a little bit more texture, if you will, or relief to it. Again, you can see coastal plains, flat. We have an area here at Mount Carmel that goes all the way to the coast, forcing the main travel through. I don't know if anybody can read that, but that little town there is Megiddo. Anybody ever heard of Armageddon? Old Testament Armageddon. This is where we get the term Armageddon from, this valley here, which is the Jezreel Valley. But when we were in Israel, we saw the Tell, which is just the ancient civilization where it's built upon each other, and I'm thinking they claim there's 26 levels where the city had been destroyed, rebuilt all through history. This was, even before the Israelites were in there, this was a critical pathway from Egypt to the Fertile Crescent up here to Mesopotamia. And so they've been fighting over that forever. And this is where Scripture in Revelation says that one of the final battle, Armageddon, will take place, the end of the tribulation. Okay, You need something, Edwin? Well, yeah, I just made a comment. You know, where's your son-in-law when you need him? And you showed up. I mean, are you like monitoring these? But it was, I've moved it now, but it was just kept my breath and making a, it was like it was too close to my face. But it's all right now. So coastal plain, try and imagine this without all the modern airports, nuclear power plants, and all the buildings. This was just a plain where it was very fruitful agriculturally. This is a, just on the north side of Mount Carmel looking over Haifa and the Haifa Bay. This is a little farther north along the coast. This would be the end of modern Israel, where the mountains come there, and that would be the start of Lebanon. Referred to as the Acco Plain or the Plain of Asherah. Asherah was the tribe that was supposed to settle this area. So a reading in Judges 1, 31 and 32. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Acco, or the inhabitants of Sidon, or of Alab, or of Akzib, or of Helba, or of Aphek, or of Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. And this would be their area. This would have been their area. Okay. Moving south now, if you could almost imagine, if you remember, Mount Carmel went up against the Mediterranean coast up in the northern part of Israel. This picture, you're standing on the north side looking north at the coast. And on this next picture, you're on the south side of the mountain looking to the south. And this is the coastal plain there, called the Plain of Sharon, and this is modern-day Caesarea. Okay, looking at it from Mount Carmel. Let's see. I brought my iPad today so I could hopefully find them faster, but I did actually bring my Bible, not my Harry Potter book, so that was good. Okay. Acts 4. If you weren't here last week, I grabbed my Harry Potter 6 instead of my Bible because they're about the same size and they're both on the kitchen table. No, it's just something that someone with a color vision deficiency is more apt to do. I guess I could have said, well, Dawn grabbed the button. No, she didn't. Acts 8:40, but Philip found himself at Azotus, and as he passed through, he preached the gospel all the towns until he came to Caesarea. So, looking from the north here, let's see, I don't know if I have a, do I have a map coming up? No, okay. Wrong way. Okay, so here's where I was saying, standing on Mount Carmel. This is the plain of Acco, or the Asher plain. And then on the south side of Mount Carmel, we're looking down at the Sharon plain, down towards Caesarea. And then down here is what the scripture mentions, Azotus. So as he traveled from Azotus up to Caesarea, this was the area that he went. And this was a main highway. This was how people went from Egypt on up into the Mesopotamia. And it wouldn't be right along the coast. They had to be inland a little bit because of all the sand and all the shifting sand and so forth. But then they couldn't get past here without swimming, so they'd have to pick through a couple of different passes, the Jokium Pass, the Megiddo Pass, and the Dothan Pass, were three avenues that the travelers could take at that time. Okay. And then Gath, now we're going a little bit farther south. Gath is probably recognizable. That's where Goliath is from. This was a Philistine city in the time of the Israelites. And this mound here is Gath, the ancient Gath. And that's Tel Aviv in the background. Again, you got to kind of try and picture all this modern stuff out of there to give you even close to an idea what the land looked back then. But it's very, very similar. So you can see the Meds over here. And so we're getting right to the transitional area between the coastal plain and the Shephelah. And Gath is kind of like right on the border there. I don't know if this is faster than actually looking them up. 2 Kings 12:17, we read, "At that time, Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath and took it. But when Hazael set his face to go up against Jerusalem, Jehoash, king of Judah, took all the sacred gifts that Jehoshaphat and Jeroboam and Hezekiah, his fathers, the kings of Judah, had dedicated, and his own sacred gifts, and all the gold was found in the treasuries of the house of the Lord of the king of the house, and sent these to Hazael of Syria." Then Hazael went away from Jerusalem. But anyway, just the reference to the Gath there. And Gath is mentioned many times in the Bible. But if you go onto BibleGateway.com and you Google for Gath, primarily you get the word gathering. And I couldn't make it look for just Gath, so then, you know, it's awfully hard to find Gath. Okay. This is a little bit more fun. Now, this really isn't the coast, but it kind of connects to the coast. This is the Jezreel Plain, and it's got the alluvium soils, and it's very fertile, very good land, but it's also a tremendous passage for people moving from Mesopotamia and later on into Europe, down into Egypt. This was a very open, very easy to travel on. And let's see, we've got a verse there. Samuel 1:20-21. "And in due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Samuel, for she said, 'I have asked for him from the Lord.' Then the man Elkanah and his house went up to offer the Lord yearly sacrifices and to pay his vow." And that's, it's 2 Samuel. Darn it. I said, that really wasn't making much sense there. That's a good verse, but 2 Samuel 1. Okay. "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised exalt. You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, and the shield of Saul not anointed." Gilboa is a mountain that is just off out of the picture here to the right. And I think a better verse might be in Joshua. Joshua 17:16. The people of Joseph said, "The hill country is not enough for us, yet all the Canaanites who dwell in the plain have chariots of iron, both those in Beth Shean and its villages, and those in the valley of Jezreel." So they're getting really worried, these Israelites, about, you know, having to deal with armies that have chariots in this area, because the chariots would be very beneficial, and they didn't have any. So anybody, I know the general knows what this is, but... an airport, right? Couple of run. Woo! And it's not just any airport. It's Israeli Air Force. It's IDF. And every time I've been there, I've never seen an airplane. And finally found out that airplanes are all underground. And they can fire them up, ramp up, and just get in the air without any warning to anybody watching them. So it's really kind of cool. And we did see a C-130 one time when we were there doing maneuvers nearby when we were on Mount Carmel, which is, again, where these pictures are being taken from, of the Jezreel Valley. This is Mount Tabor, and this is the Hill of Moriah. Anybody remember a good Bible thing that happened in Mount Tabor? That ring a bell for anybody? Nope. Good guess. That was Ebal and Gerizim. And we actually did that when we were in Israel. Remember doing that, Karen? We could go up on Ebal. No, we could go up on Gerizim. It was in the West Bank, but it wasn't as bad a part of the West Bank as the other mountain was. So we could go up there, and we stood on the hill, and we did the blessings and the curses. All right. So let's go to Judges 4, 6 and 7. She, being Deborah, sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, "Has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand." So, I've got another picture of Tabor, and it's kind of just like a pimple. It's just this big mountain all by itself with lots of area around it. And so the problem is, in the plains of Jezreel, the troops with their chariots had a much greater advantage, and the Israelites didn't have any chariots. But God miraculously flooded the area, and the chariots all bogged down, and the Israelites had victory. And one of the Professor Schlegel, one of the teachers at the Master's College, I mean University, at the Ibex, has witnessed, you know, rainy time when it's just muddy galore all over in the valley. So it's, but obviously it was a miracle of God. Jeremiah 46, 18 says, "As I live, declares the King, whose name is the Lord of hosts, like Tabor among the mountains and like Carmel by the sea, shall one come." Both Mount Tabor and Mount Carmel are referenced also, I think, in a psalm. Look up a psalm here, as just being a beautiful, high, you know, a positive thing of Israel, of the land. "The north and the south you have created them, Tabor and Hermon," that's also Mount Hermon in now Lebanon, "joyously praise your name." And that's mentioned in a psalm. So now when you read about Mount Tabor, you have an idea of what it is. Okay, Shephelah, or lowland. Lowland is the word that the NASB uses. Shephelah is used in ESV. It means the same thing. It just means lowland. This is the Hebrew word. And now we're seeing we're not really hills, we're not really valleys or coastal, we're kind of a transitional area. And so this is a nice example of the Shephelah. And again, just to remind you, we've been looking at the coast here all the way up and down. And now we're going to look at this transitional area before we get into the real hill country, to the higher peaks. Valley of Elah. What's that famous for? David and Goliath. Very good, Karen. It's only been, what, 9 years since you were there? Well, you were back more recently than that, but when you did the intensive study. Yes, the Valley of Eli. And this is the tell of Zechariah. And if I use the word tell, it just means that's where the ancient city was. And it's usually a mound because these cities have been destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, and they end up being a hill, a mound. So that's the original Ezekah there, which we're going to see here in a minute. We know, all right, here, we'll see how this works here. I'm going to try and enlarge this. Oh. You can see how the terrain is getting much more rugged here. This is the hill country. The map even says it. And this is Elah Valley. And right here, Gath is kind of on the transition between the coast and now the Shephelah. And this is what we were looking at, Azekah. I think they said the picture was from the east, looking down this way, down the valley. And we believe that this is where David and Goliath had their confrontation. The scripture says that the Philistines were between Azekah and Succoth in another little town. It probably wasn't a continuous line because they had to be near some place where they could get supplies. And then the Israelites would have been on the northern edge of this hill, very likely, and then maybe back in settlements in their country, because this is where Saul was. He was dominating. Where was Saul from? What tribe was Saul from? Benjamin. And Benjamin is north of Judah or Judea, and so Saul was intent on protecting all this. Well, the Philistines from over here. Is this, Don says sometimes I drive people nuts away. Is that too much? Okay. Don't want to have any epileptic seizures. But I'll try not to move it so quickly. But the Philistines wanted to move through here and get into the ridge route here and then take Bethlehem and Hebron and totally cut off Israel from the rest of their country. And here again, God miraculously stopped the Philistines from doing that. And this hopefully will help. It's got the showing that where David came to see his brothers, and where the Israelites were camped, and where the Philistines were camped, and see how they were intent on getting into this part of the country and taking it from Saul. Saul's kingship probably was in the balance there if he had lost that to Saul. First Samuel, we're not going to read all of this. We're all pretty familiar with the story. But just verses 17, 1 to 2. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and camped between Succoth and Azekah in Ephes Damin, which scholars think might be right in this area here. You see, there's a question mark. They don't know for sure. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in a line of battle against the Philistines. Now, this has been going on for days, and finally David shows up, and he had just been anointed king recently, though he was still a boy or a young man. And he says, well, I'll take on this Philistine. So he goes out, and we all know that story. But this is where it happened. Five smooth stones. Nobody knows why he picked five. He only needed one. But one thought was that Goliath had four brothers, and he thought, oh, if I have to take them all out, well, I'll need four more. I don't know. We think that it was about the size of a softball. Maybe it was the size of a stone. It wasn't a tiny little thing. That he probably used. And there was a brook of Elah, which is right near the area, which when you're in Israel, you get to go to the brook of Elah, which is dry, which is, you know, probably the place, maybe not, and certainly not the exact spot, but it's in the ballpark, and you get to pick your five stones and bring them home. Don? When we were
there.
Right, right. And so here's the lineup of all the Philistines, and then Israel, probably up here and maybe into the hill country. And so somewhere David came out, and you know, they weren't super close, but they didn't have guns back then, so they didn't have to be super far apart. But yes, it was shown that they could easily have communicated. They were hearing Goliath belting out his claims every day, and David decided to his God was stronger than them, and you all know how the story ends. But that's a good point, Don. And there's other places that we were at. I imagine it got demonstrated for the Ibex people north of the Sea of Galilee, where they think the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount was preached. If you can get, you know, no cars going by, you can have a man way down there speak, and people way up on the hillside can hear, even today. It's pretty cool. Okay, all right. Oh, gosh. All right. Next, we're going to look at an area that's called the Sorek Valley. And if you looked at the map, if you recognize the map before, it's just the one valley in the Shephelah north of the Valley of Elah. And Zora and Eshtaol. And any, that ring any bells for anybody? Sorek Valley. Samson was born between these two cities. And then we go on to Timnah. That's where Delilah was from. And so this is the Sorek Valley, the Tel Beth Shemesh, which has a lot of its own history. It was here where the Philistines, remember the Philistines had taken the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant kept, or the Lord kept knocking down their gods. And so they finally said, okay, we're getting rid of this thing. But they didn't really expect it to come back to Israel, because they put, you know, two mama cows and took their babies away and sent these cows. But anyway, they came and they ended up at Beth Shemesh. And this is where the Israelites got the Ark of the Covenant back. And again, remember, we're in the Shephelah. So the Philistines were, you know, border Shephelah and onto the coastal area. So they were all over here. And the cart brought the Ark of Covenant right on back. Okay. And if you read about various things about Samson, they mentioned the Sorek Valley, Timnah, and these other locations. And you can see, again, get rid of all the modern stuff, that this was just a very much open valley, very easy to transition, very easy to travel. Here, just kind of a picture. Here's our Shephelah. And then now we're moving into the hill country, so it's kind of a transition here. That's one other picture. This is farther south in the Shephelah, Lachish, an important one of the few cities that was well protected, fell right before Jerusalem did in the Babylonian siege. And then we moved into the hill country, and we got some serious hills. Now, you know, we always think of the Rocky Mountains. Oh, man, are they big, because they're 14,000 feet. Well, but they started 5,000 to 6,000 feet. So, I mean, they're okay. You know, they're 8,000, 9,000 feet tall. But you go out to California, and there's 11,000 and 12,000-foot peaks, and they started 500. So these are about, you know, 3,000 for the most part in Israel, 2,600 and so forth. More like the Appalachians, if you will. And there again, just giving you a little perspective. North end of the Dead Sea, there's Jerusalem, Bethlehem just to the south, and then here's our hill country. And of course, a lot of concentration in the Jerusalem area, a lot of things happen there. But this just south of Jerusalem, a valley in the hill country. I won't turn there, but 1 Chronicles 14:9-10 mentions this valley of Rephaim. This may be the road to Emmaus. It's not for sure. Again, in the hill country. And the terracing that we see. I would like to look at the Proverbs. This is kind of a neat thing, because when I would have read this proverb before going to Israel, I would have had a whole different concept of what I was picturing in my mind. Proverbs 24, 30 and 31. I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense, and behold, it was all overgrown with thorns, and ground was covered with needles, and its stone wall was broken down. So, you know, if you're going to be a terrace farmer, you need to keep your wall together. So there's an example in hill country of a terrace wall that has fallen down. And, of course, no one's farming there right now, and so it makes for a nice picture for us. And finally, we'll end with... this is a little farther south in the hill country, but the sheep, good grazing area. The soil down there is not great for growing other things, but it's fine for grazing. And this is called the Nahal Aragot, which comes out of the mountains south of Jerusalem and eventually feeds into. And Nahal is like a dry riverbed. And a wadi is the Arabic for that, and Nahal is the Hebrew. And these will be raging rivers when there's the rainy season, and then most of the year they're just dry. But this does feed into the Dead Sea from this area here. So that's all I got for today. Any comments or questions? Okay. Sure, Meg. They're pretty self-sufficient. They've got down in the plains now, they've got all kinds of citrus fruit that maybe wasn't, you know, natural back 2,000 years, but they've got a lot of advanced techniques for irrigation. There is a problem with the water, and there's struggles over the water. Partly the Dead Sea is getting smaller because Israel and Jordan are taking so much water out from Galilee and the Jordan as it comes down. They do have, for food, I think they're pretty well self-sufficient. John, do you remember anything specifically on that? Yep. 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 But they don't really have any trade agreements or anything. I mean, certainly not with anybody right around them. But I don't know, you know, as far as the food. They pretty well have to take care of themselves. I mean, that's their attitude about everything. You know, defense. I know that I don't know if that's much. John, I don't know if John, if you remember, but it's something that they're striving for, but I don't think they've really succeeded in making that practical yet. So... It's in the works, and it's definitely would be a wise thing for them to do. But I don't know a percentage currently. Aquifer? Well, there's an aquifer that we'll probably look at down the road, but that was from the ancient times, from the Mount Carmel to Caesarea. And it was added on to in the time of Hadrian, and then even the Crusaders and some of the others. But I don't. Luke. Okay, well, I can do that if I can get back. Whoops, wrong way. We had so much more to cover. Okay, you see this the Dead Sea here, and there's the mountains here. And it comes out, I think, around the En-Ged here. I think it comes out into the Dead Sea right around here up from the mountains. Yep, a little north of Masada. I don't know if they even have our God on this map or not, but good question. Yep. Sarah. No, we didn't get to Lebanon, and I don't know if they still have those huge forests or not. You know, with all the terrorists and stuff, I don't know what's been destroyed and what hasn't. It's all right. 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 No, I think we're going to cover that next week or the week after that. The Promised Land is talked about, land of milk and honey. It's talked about, what's the other term that's very, it makes you think of a very lush area. It wasn't even for the Israelites, but it had the capability that they could graze the cattle, they could grow the nuts and the fruits and the olives and the grapes, and they could work out a living there and a life, but it was no Garden of Eden, ever. And it was really bad in the 20s and 30s, 1920s and 30s, when Israel went over there, people started going over there. I mean, even in the 40s, this area was malarial swamps, and many people died of malaria trying to drain this area and make it livable and for agriculture. So, good questions. No more questions. You're dismissed.